From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, End Days, a chilling glimpse into the future with Bob Gleason, a story that most media does not want to handle. We'll cover it for you on Coast to Coast AM. Here's what's happening in Carson City, Nevada. A man with an AK-47 assault rifle shot an entire group of five uniformed National Guard members eating breakfast at a Nevada IHOP, killing two of them, another person in a hail of gunfire. The suspect, a 32-year-old man of Carson City, also shot himself, later died at a hospital. Seven people were wounded in the attack at a strip mall near a casino and department store in the state's capital. Gunman's motive not totally clear. Authorities investigating whether the military members were targeted. Two of the guardsmen killed were men. Another woman was shot and killed. Four people dead. More than 1,000 homes now have been destroyed in at least 57-plus wildfires across the rain-starved Texas. Time for a little prayer there, folks. Most of them in one devastating blaze close to Austin that is still raging out of control. Speaking at a news conference near one of the fire-ravaged areas, Texas Governor Rick Perry said more than 100,000 acres have been burned in a drought-stricken state. Mike Adams, who heads up, of course, naturalnews.com, lives very close to all of this mess. Mike, can you give us an update on what's going on there?
Sure, George. 100,000 acres burned, up to 1,000 homes burned to the ground, thousands homeless. The local communities, churches and YMCAs and even public schools have opened their doors to serve as refugee relief centers, so thousands of families are seeking help there. The federal government, an interagency fire center, took command today, and to the frustration of many locals, they began turning away volunteer firefighters, some of which had driven all night long to get onto the scene and help out. They're being turned away. There's some confusion as to why. But on the good side, FEMA has announced that it is going to be granting money to pay for up to 75% of some of the approved firefighting costs. So there's some confusion from the federal government, but also a little bit of financial relief headed our way.
All right, it's a tense situation out there, Mike. And of course, we have done a number of mind consciousness experiments in the past, and many of them have succeeded. Let's do this one. What the heck? Why don't we just take a few seconds here, all of us concentrate on a burst of rain, a tremendous deluge over Austin, Texas, and the other parts of Texas. Just concentrate on that for the next few seconds. And let's see what happens. We've done it before, and we'll monitor that situation. If you go up to coasttocoastam.com, take a look at the highlight reel there. Look at the picture, the Apollo moon tracks, and trash and never-seen-before images. A robotic spaceship circling the moon has snapped the sharpest photos ever of the tracks and trash left behind by Apollo astronauts in visits from 1969 to 72. If some of you are still on the fence about whether we landed on the moon, well, there's trash on the moon. NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter got close enough to see the astronauts' path when they walked on the moon. The photos also show ruts left by a moon buggy and even backpacks pitched out of lunar landers before the U.S. visitors returned back home. A tick-borne infection, which can cause severe disease and even death, is becoming a growing threat in the U.S. blood supply now. There are currently no diagnostic tests approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration that can detect the infection before people donate blood. A 31-year-old study of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention now suggests that the parasitic infection may be increasing. The infections are marked by anemia, fever, chills, and fatigue, but they can also cause organ failure and death. The still rare disease is known to occur in seven states in the U.S., in the Northeast and Upper Midwest, primarily in the spring and in the summer. Some of the states: Massachusetts, New York, Connecticut, Minnesota, Rhode Island, New Jersey, and Wisconsin. Europeans are plagued by mental and neurological diseases, with almost 165 million people, or 38% of the population, suffering illnesses such as brain disorders, as depression, anxiety, insomnia, dementia, according to a large new study. And panic attacks, up a disorder of an anxiety attack in which you have repeated attacks of intense fear that something bad will occur when not expected. The cause unknown. Genetics may play a role. Studies suggest that if one identical twin has a panic disorder, the other twin will also develop the condition 40% of the time. However, panic disorder often occurs when there is no family history. Panic disorder is twice as common in women as in men. Symptoms usually begin around the age 25, sometimes before that, and also occur in the mid-30s and carry on in life. Although panic disorder may occur in children, it is often not diagnosed until they are older. It's a horrible feeling. You think you're dying. You think you're having a heart attack. In a moment, Dr. Peter Bragan joins us. We're going to be talking about panic attacks, and we'll take your calls because maybe you've had one. Dr. Peter's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, he was just with me a little bit more than a week ago. Dr. Peter Bragan is a Harvard-trained psychiatrist, former full-time consultant. He's in private practice now in Ithaca, New York. Dr. Bragan also acts as a medical expert in criminal malpractice and product liability issues. We were talking about antidepressants and antipsychotic drugs when he was last with me. And at that time, we talked about getting him back to talk about panic attacks, something that seems to be going on all over the place. Is Dr. Peter Bragan back with us on Coast to Coast. Peter, how are you?
Oh, I'm really good, and I am so glad to be back on your show. Got a tremendous response to the my first time on your show. And you know, I've done a lot of shows. I think I got the best response I've ever had from being on your show, George. Thank you.
Well, Peter, thank you. You brought us some great information, and this one is something I've wanted to do for a very long time, especially with a friend of mine. Does ring announcing here in the Midwest. And he had a panic attack while he was in the middle of the ring announcing the boxers. And I mean, it was for him one of the worst feelings he's ever had. He actually thought he was having a heart attack and he was barely able to continue. I mean, the audience was looking at him like, what the heck's going on with this guy? And I mean, he got through it. And I wanted to talk with you. One, you're a psychiatrist, so you're very familiar with this. And then what can people do about it? Well, let's talk a little bit about what I think we know about panic disorder, Peter, and you tell us what the medical world tells us. It's this anxiety. People think they're having heart attacks. It just seems to crop up at times you don't even expect. Is that all pretty accurate?
Yeah, I think we need to get more at what the root of it is. The basic experience of anxiety is utter emotional helplessness. It's a sense of overwhelming dread and disaster. And in that process of anxiety, what makes it unique is we can't think, we can't focus on anything. We literally give up our minds, or our minds become overwhelmed at those times. It goes back to a basic childhood experience of being completely helpless. You know, as infants, you know, we are totally dependent on being taken care of and being related to. And then we build our own abilities over the years to take care of ourselves, to manage our minds, to manage our emotions, to carry out rational activities. But in all of us, George, remains this feeling at times that we could lose it completely and not be in control of ourselves. And if we get focused on that, that it's about our ability not to be helpless, our ability to take control of ourselves, then any anxiety can be handled because you start really specifically with, I can control my mind. I can think, I can act, I can forge ahead, I can work my way out of this situation. And one of the keys almost always is getting out of the feeling of I'm doomed into the feeling of I can relate to the people around me. So if you're in the ring and you're terrified, or you're on stage and you're terrified, or you're in the airplane and you're feeling totally frightened out of your mind, if you can remember that what really brings us back to reality is being able to relate to another human being, you can look at the audience, you can look at the person next to you, and you can begin to relate and pull yourself out. So it's a matter of deciding you can think and then beginning to relate to people around you where possible. People in isolation have managed to relate to God or to their families and to pull themselves out of that utter sense of being overwhelmed and abandoned. But it's a basic human experience, George. And nighttime, of course, is one of the worst times. So many folks who are listening to late radio have an awareness at times of having been anxious and frightened, because it certainly often comes to us at night. And I think that, again, goes back to the loneliness of the child, the inability of the child who's completely alone to take care of himself or herself.
And, Peter, let me ask you then, that this panic disorder, is it then, in your opinion, is it caused by some underlying pressure, anxiety that is building up in an individual? Maybe they've lost their job. Maybe they've got problems at home. And maybe it's been going on for 2 years. Who knows? Is that symptomatic of a panic attack?
Well, it's usually about something that we think is entirely unmanageable, entirely unhandleable.
But where is it? Is it tucked away in the back of our head, or are we fully aware of it?
No, it's almost always, the deeper part of it is almost always tucked away in the back of our heads. Once we learn to manage anxiety and to think about it, to take control, to relate to people around us, we get strong enough, we can then later on invite anxiety. We can say, come on, do your worst,
Come on, take it on,
right? Find out what the underlying issues are. They can be many different things.
Some people with panic disorders have talked about at least some of these symptoms during an attack, almost four of them: chest pains, discomfort, dizziness or fainting, fear of dying, fear of losing control, impending doom, feeling of choking, detachment, unreality, upset stomachs. I mean, this is just about every symptom everybody gets all the time.
Well, you know, when you are terrified out of your mind, when you feel all is over, when the dread comes, the body responds. One way it responds is with adrenaline, and adrenaline gets your heart pounding, can get your blood pressure up, your pulse is racing. So it's very easy to feel you're having a heart attack, but you're not. It actually has nothing at all to do with that. It has to do with this basic human experience that has somehow been keyed off, that we are helpless and unable to control our minds. Just utter helplessness.
I am not in favor of antidepressants. You aren't either. They recommend antidepressants for people with panic disorders. Your take on this?
Well, I think it's a mistake to think of it as genetic, or to think of it as a disease, or to think of it as best being treated with drugs, because all that says, yeah, you can't control your mind. When you go to the doc and you feel like you've been overwhelmed, it's completely out of control, you're going to get anxious every night you try to sleep, you're going to get anxious every time you try to perform, or every time you're trying to meet a girl or a boy or whatever it is, and the doc says it's genetic, and the doc says take a drug, the doc says it's an illness, you are reinforced in this terrible feeling that your life is out of your control. And it's so much better to be told that this is an overwhelming attack of feelings of helplessness. The way out is to focus on retaking control of your mind, of the moments that's going on. And in particular, because human relationship is what keeps us sane, to at that moment reconnect to the people around you. I don't think it's a very hard thing to help people learn to handle their anxiety, but it's also very much a real part of life, because we human beings are fragile. There's a lot of frightening things for us. It's not a disease. It's an aspect of life that can, and it's an aspect where we get frightened or overwhelmed out of our minds, and we got to get our minds back. We got to take charge. And too often the docs and the therapists say, no, let me, the doc or the therapist, take charge. I'll give you hypnosis, I'll give you this, I'll do that. But actually, people can learn to stop the anxiety by focusing on their own intelligence, their own ability to think, to get their feelings under control, to relate And if no one's there to relate to God or your loved ones or something else that matters to you in your life.
Peter, how long do they last? Minutes, hours, days, weeks? How long?
Anxiety can take any kind of form. It can go on in a low-grade way throughout much of a person's life, or it can suddenly come slamming you out of nowhere. It just has all kinds of shapes and forms. Panic disorder is an artificial creation of the Upjohn Company that literally made it up and gave it all of its definitions so that they could be the first company to have a drug Xanax to treat it with. Panic disorder is really nothing more serious, but nothing more than recurrent experiences of anxiety. And these things are a part of life and can be managed and overcome. And then as you begin to gain that strength over it, George, you can then ask yourself, what is it I'm so afraid of? What is it? And often it's about something that threatens our very identities, that we'll freak out and lose it all in the airplane, that if we lose a loved one, that life comes to an end, we're unable to manage on our own. It's often about feeling we just can't handle life anymore. And at times like that, we need someone to support and help us, but in strengthening us to handle our lives, to take charge of our minds, take charge of our emotions.
We're talking with Dr. Peter Bregan. We're going to take calls in a moment after the break. His website, the BREGGIN.com. What else are we going to say, Peter?
Well, I want to warn people that taking the drugs, they can help you temporarily. Like you can take a Xanax, and because it lowers the activity of your mind, literally suppresses your overall brain activity, or the antidepressant, the anxiety can temporarily diminish. And I don't blame somebody for wanting to do that, but be aware that when it's done repeatedly, the anxiety is going to build up and build up. And we know scientifically that people were more anxious at the end of the Xanax studies that the FDA used to approve the drug. They were literally more anxious at the end than they were at the beginning, many, many of them. So, you know, I certainly understand a person taking a sleeping pill to get through an anxious night. It's not a lot different from having a drink to get through an anxious night. The same neurotransmitters are affected. Very similar neurotransmitters are affected. But remember that ultimately this is an experience of emotional overwhelm where we lose control over our minds and we feel like it's the end. And the way out is regaining that control.
Wasn't there some guy who had a midair panic attack?
Yeah, that was written up in the news recently. And God knows that's easy enough to understand, because where do you feel less in control of yourself than in an airplane?
Yeah.
Your life is in the pilot's hands and you're in a tin can. I go up in an airplane, I think to myself, this is positively the craziest thing I've ever done in my life. I got no control of what's going to happen to me. But when I grasp that, I realized the way out was to regain the control of myself. I've sat on airplanes with very anxious people, and I just relate to them. I turn to them and I start talking to them. And when they connect with another human being, start using their thinking again and start caring again, the anxiety diminishes. I've had that experience helping even infants in airplanes when they get terrified by this strange experience and their ears are aching. A lot of it has to do with our basic nature, which is we're sanest when we're connected to other folks. And in anxiety, we feel utterly alone and utterly isolated, utterly overwhelmed. So there are ways out of it by understanding what it's about.
Panic attacks generally occur then when you're alone?
Well, they often occur when you feel isolated or threatened. You could be in a group, but threatened, like you can't handle meeting this person or you can't handle going on the stage. And often there is something underlying. I'll never forget the woman who told me her panic attack came out of the blue. She was just in a train, and now she can't go in trains anymore, and it had nothing to do with anything. But it turned out that she didn't want to remember. She was on the way to sign her divorce papers. So there can be something even obvious that's giving that, triggering that sense of overwhelm, that you lose track of, because anxiety obliterates reasoning. You want to get your reasoning back and your relating back.
Okay, you stay with us, Peter. We're going to come right back. We're going to take phone calls, questions for you, or if you've had a panic attack, tell us what it was like. We'll be right back. Well, next hour, End Days with Robert Gleason. Get ready for a story that the major media just does not want to talk about. And when we come back with Dr. Peter Bragan, we will take your calls as we discuss panic attacks this hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Dr. Peter Bragan with us. We're going to take your phone calls on panic disorders and perhaps your stories as well. Peter, so if somebody feels that they're having these disorders, what's the first thing you recommend? Should they go see a doctor? What do they do?
Well, if you're going to seek help, I would be very careful about going to a medical doc, and I say that as a medical doc, because the first hint that you have anxiety, you're going to be given psychiatric drugs, all of which can worsen anxiety, all of which in the long run aren't good for you, and all of which will encourage you to think that anxiety is unmanageable. Patients end up tinkering with their drug for years, one drug, another, trying to manage anxiety that might have on its own been gone in a month or a few months. So, you know, seek help from a good, solid therapist. Ask friends. Call people on the phone, clinical social workers, clinical psychologists, marriage and family therapists. Ask them if they're comfortable dealing with anxiety without drugs. So I very strongly advise that. And view your anxiety as an aspect of your experience where you are being overwhelmed. And in that process of being overwhelmed, you're losing your mind, literally, and you just feel like it's all over, you're falling apart. But it's an experience, and that you can work your way out of that experience by recognizing that it is an experience, and an experience that goes back to childhood feelings of overwhelm, and that you can work your way out. Start thinking again during the process. Look around you. Think again like a ballerina spinning who spots on something, you know, spot on another human being, spot on the idea that you're rational, spot on the idea that God can be there for you if you believe that and work with that. But know that it's in your power to retake charge of your mind, and your anxiety will subside when you accomplish that. It literally will subside when you accomplish that. In my practice, it's routine for people to come in a state of anxiety. Just know they're there. Know that there is somebody who's confident and not afraid of their being anxious and isn't going to come up with some weird technique or a drug. And people calm down with their anxiety in minutes in the presence of a therapist who isn't getting anxious in the face of their anxiety. So it's really a living experience, and it can be handled often with the help of others or on your own by finding ways to relate to others and take charge of your mind.
All right, let's go to the phones in the short time we've got with you this hour, Peter. We'll go to Shelley, Newport, Kentucky, east of the Rockies, and you're on the air. Hi, Shelley, go ahead.
Hi, George. Yeah, you know, when I was younger, I was a performer and didn't get stage fright. But now that I'm older, I have these anxiety attacks pretty often, and it seems like they started around 08 when this whole bank debacle happened, and it just kept getting worse and worse. Now, I have found that sometimes there's a local line we can call and just talk to somebody, and if I just focus on that other person talking, especially this one guy that talks a lot, it'll help get it down for me, just if I focus on somebody else. So maybe a person could just call a talkative friend. It could help. But it is very scary, and I do feel like I'm losing my mind. Last Friday, there was a guest on this program, a woman who she had just written a book, oddly enough, just now. She's putting it out. She had a near-death experience where she went to heaven, she thinks. And apparently this week we're going to go into a worse depression than we've ever had. And when she was up there, these people told her, people around God said it's going to be the new world order. Well, if you listen to this show, that's a very bad word. That's anti-God. But this woman said it's going to be a new world order. We're going to be starving. And when I heard, I didn't expect anything like that. And when I heard it, I started getting sick at my stomach. And it lasted like the whole weekend. I even talked to the deacon in our church. But, you know, I mean, some of this is based in what's really going on. But there was just something about the way that woman said it. You know, she's coming out with a book that people won't even be able to buy in a couple of weeks if her story's correct. But what do you do like that when you...
Well, and what I think what she meant too, Shelley, is that, in her opinion, it's ongoing and it's really moving along at a fast clip. I mean, you're not going to see next week the click and the New World Order is here. But things are happening. I mean, you look at what's happening worldwide. Now they're concerned about banks failing in Europe. It's a mess. So, Peter, let me ask you this. In terms of worldwide events, problems in Libya, problems in Europe financially, problems back at home, do they all contribute to panic disorder?
Well, anything frightening will obviously make us more anxious, but it's incredibly important to realize that we have it within ourselves. Within ourselves as people, to meet whatever the world throws at us. And if we don't believe that, we will automatically have anxiety. So what this wonderful caller is describing is how you can get generated into a state of anxiety by being led to believe that you have no control. Well, we may not have control over our death, but we can control our attitude toward our death. We may not be able to get out of prison for 20 years like Nelson Mandela, or 30 years, but he controlled what he did in the prison. We may be terrified standing up for rights of other human beings and our own rights, but we can do it in a way in which we know what we are doing and we control ourselves. So don't ever allow yourself to think that there are some events that can overwhelm you emotionally and make you anxious, or you will automatically become anxious. And this is not to deny how hard it is to live. It's to accept how hard it is to live and know that our jobs are to maintain the best we can do. I mean, I hope that if I'm ever in a plane crash and I'm heading toward Earth and I'm going to be gone in a few minutes, that I turn to the person next to me and help them stay connected to the end. Or I hope I sure. get to text somebody about how much I love them, maybe Ginger. I don't want to leave open the option that some aspect of life is going to overwhelm me. And that's why people get focused on particular things. They get focused on one thing as the thing they can't handle, and it becomes overwhelming. And they need to know it's not the thing. It's not the airplane. It's not the speech. It's not this or that. It's that you got hooked somehow into feeling you weren't in charge anymore. That's the key, George.
Let's go to Austin, Texas. Johnny's there. Lots of fires out that way. Hey, Johnny, I hope you're okay, huh?
Hey, yeah, I'm not having a panic attack right now. let me kind of talk to Peter and you, George, about this. But I was in Houston radio. I was kind of a high-profile air personality guy for there many years. And when I was in my adult life in my later 20s, I was working at a radio station where I was very uncomfortable, out of place, whatever you want to call it. And I started having these panic attacks.
Hmm.
Because I was working for a program director, God love her, but she was in over her head, and she did not know how to handle people. And I'm very sensitive, and I was just being called in there and micromanaged, I guess, on a daily basis. And this went on for months, and it just kept building up and building up. And I look back in my early life when I was a little kid. And I had a school phobia in like third grade or something. So the point I'm trying to get to is I think you can have this where you're helpless. and it can go dormant for some time. And then when you have high anxiety, cumulative stress, and so forth, that's the trigger. Could I be right there?
Oh, I think that's just a wonderful story, again, of how these things evolve. And they often, and you can do this in therapy, you can do this with yourself, they often go back to something overwhelming in childhood that's getting keyed off. For some reason, you had a feeling of being overwhelmed about going to school. That's what a school phobia is being overwhelmed about going to school. It often has much more to do with something like leaving home or being feeling abandoned, feeling that the parent's not there. And it doesn't mean bad parenting. All this is a part of the struggle to grow up. And then later on, you get keyed into a situation that somehow reminds you of that. Somehow this woman maybe was like the teacher or whatever. We don't know the details. And it keyed you off again into that childhood feeling of helplessness. And somebody else might have handled that very differently. Somebody else might have gotten angry. Somebody else might have gotten depressed. Somebody else might have just went job hunting. We respond, every human being responds so differently to every stimulus. Never get yourself caught in the box that you have to respond with anxiety to a given situation. You can be sure there are other people who wouldn't. Be one of those other people who wouldn't.
Temecula, California. Vince, take it away. You're up with us west of the Rockies.
Hey, great. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I just had a quick question. I'm in my mid-30s, and I pretty much have had panic disorder since high school. Unfortunately, mine came as a result of smoking, you know, some stuff I shouldn't have been. But what I wanted to know is what Dr. Bregan's feelings are about the Linden method. It basically talks about resetting your amygdala and the area of the brain that's in charge of the, I guess, panic response or whatever.
Sure. Tickling your amygdala, as they say.
Well,
what do you think
of that?
How do
they presume to fix your amygdala? The psychosurgeons used to make that claim. They'd go in there and burn holes in the amygdala.
We don't want to do that.
Unfortunately, I did not have access
to
that.
Listen, it's not about your amygdala. For one thing, our brains are so beyond our understanding at this point, we don't have good anatomical functional connections to our being human beings in general or to our having this or that struggle with life. So anybody who's selling you something about the amygdala is selling you something. And the thing that will increase your anxiety is the idea that your brain's in control of you when you should be thinking you're in control of your brain. You need to think of yourself as a being, a spirit, an identity, a person, however you conceive of yourself, that you're the core, your brain is what you're using. And psychiatry makes a terrible mistake by making people feel helpless because they make up concepts about the brain causing you to be depressed, the brain causing you to be anxious. And in fact, there's no evidence for that. There's no evidence that the brain is making us in these different ways. Now, a direct brain injury isn't good for you, and you can hurt yourself like you took some drug that upset you and made you anxious. Yes, when you cause brain dysfunction grossly, it'll cause anxiety, and that may have kind of sensitized you to getting anxious later on. I wouldn't be surprised if have you stayed good drug-free since?
He's moved on.
Well, I would certainly urge him to stay drug-free since we know it started, or he thinks it started with drugs. But no, these things are not about the brain, not the routine things that disturb us and bring us to psychiatrists. And the odd thing is that when a person does have a brain disease, a neurologic disorder, I diagnosed one that several psychiatrists had missed in a patient. They were giving the patient drugs, and the patient has a neurological disorder. Well, the problem is psychiatry is so eager to find mythical brain disorders in their patients that my colleagues often don't see the real ones when they come by. But the vast majority of time, the stuff that we go to therapists and psychiatrists are about are things that we need to be helped to learn to control ourselves about and not have somebody tinker with our brains.
Let's go to Houston, Texas. It's Rick's turn. He's been holding a while. Rick, go ahead. Thanks.
Hey, George. How are you doing tonight?
Okay, Rick. Thank you.
Hey, Doctor. I have a quick question for you. I understand the part of, like, the being and the human taking control and breathing techniques and being in control of your emotions, but what about veterans who have been exposed to 8 or 9 months of stressful adrenaline? You know, some people like it, some people don't, but it changes you because the stressors like adrenaline rewire your brain. So like, I'm really nervous right now just talking to you guys. But
sure.
It's hard to talk. It's hard to deal with it whenever you have to turn it off. You come back to reality, civilian life, and you have that fear of flight, fight or fly. That's the thing they call it. You do your breathing techniques to try to control it, but it's there now.
And why does breathing, slow breathing, tend to work sometimes, Peter?
Well, I think it works because it gives us something to do. It gives us something to control. It reminds us we're in charge of least of our breathing. And if we're hyperventilating, that can cause anxiety physiologically. That is a physiological cause. And if you slow your breathing down, you can stop the hyperventilation. I'm deeply sympathetic, empathic toward veterans. You know, we hold an annual conference called the Empathic Therapy Conference, and we try to invite veterans. I speak annually whenever I get a chance. Actually, whenever I get a chance, I speak to veterans groups. There's no way to go through a war without coming out with the symptoms people call PTSD. But PTSD is not a disease. It's the normal reaction of a normal person with a normal brain to horrific circumstances. And anybody subjected to war comes back with some of that kind of an issue. And what people need who have this kind of experience where they come back from war and they're hyper and they're sensitive and they're overreactive and it's difficult and all the things that they needed to do in wartime, like being aggressive, being alert, and being cautious and so on, are just getting them in trouble now in everyday life. What we're finding out is the worst thing that's being done to these soldiers, these young men and women, is they're being given tons of psychiatric drugs by the doctors in the military zones and the doctors back home, and this is making them much, much worse. And what's needed, again, is what everyone needs when they've been overwhelmed. They need good, supportive, caring help, not just the therapist. They need the support of their families. They need the support of the armed forces. They need the support of the public. They need to know they're appreciated, cared about. They need as much human service and caring as they can get. And you don't want, when your brain is that jangled from all that stress and your mind is that jangled, you want to be very careful about drugs and alcohol and marijuana and things like that. But my heart goes out because there isn't anyone who would go through those experiences without having to struggle to regain control. But that's ultimately what has to be done. It's always that issue, to regain control of our minds and our emotions.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much for being on the program, Peter. It makes a lot of sense. And, you know, folks, just be easy, be calm. Up next, Bob Gleason joins us end days on Coast to Coast AM.